You're listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and Print Disabled. Welcome to today's reading of the Council Bluffs Daily Nonpareil for March 8th. I'm Emma Masso from Drake University. Here is our first story. Lifeblood of the community. States invest in rural grocers. The caption says, Tom Mullerland stands near a site where a 2021 fire destroyed Mullerland Grocery, a long staple of Main Street in Malverland. In the photo, it shows a man standing in front of a field of grass and dirt, and behind him are some more buildings. The story says, Chorus Hassler rushes in the front door of Post 60 Market and heads straight for the produce case. I'm back, she announces. It's around lunchtime, but it's already her second trip in today. This time, she's picking up a few items for the Friday fish fry at the local Catholic church. Hassler is a regular customer and invests in the small grocery store, opened in 2022 as a cooperative. The store produces convenience, sure. It's the only place in town to buy fresh fruits, vegetables, and meats. But it's also a social hub for the northeast Nebraska town of Emerson, population of 891. The store is the lifeblood of the community, Hassler said. We have to keep our store. We have to keep our schools. We have to keep our churches. It's all a struggle right now. The market opened 4 years after the closure of the town's only grocery store. Some 110 community members bought shares, which funded the transformation of a shuttered American Legion post into a brightly lit store packed with fresh and packaged foods. Preserving grocery stores has been a challenge for rural communities. Small, often declining populations made it tough to turn a profit in an industry known for its razor-thin margins. Increased competition from online retailers, the onslaught of chains such as Dollar General stores, and an aging lineup of independent grocers have only made things tougher. The U.S. Department of Agriculture has tracked the decline of rural grocery stores. By 2015, USDA research has showed a total of 44 countries had no grocery store in them. Counties. By 2015, USDA research has showed a total of 44 counties had no grocery store at all. All but four of the counties were rural. In Kansas, one in five rural stores closed between 2008 and 2018, according to the Rural Grocery Initiative at Kansas State University. No new store has opened in the past of 105 communities that lost grocers over that time. Proposed legislation at Nebraska's Capitol in Lincoln could provide some relief for stores like Post 600 Market. If passed, the new law would provide grants and loans for small grocers. It's among several legislative efforts in the region that aim to tackle the complex problem. In neighboring Kansas and Iowa, lawmakers have introduced bills with similar goals, following the lead of states, including Illinois, Minnesota, North Dakota, and Oklahoma, that have enacted laws setting up special funds to boost rural grocery stores. We're in the global economy, and Amazon's dominating, but that doesn't mean we should suffer, said Kansas State Senator Rob Olson, a Republican. For 2 years in a row, Olson has introduced bills that would provide tax incentives for the development of grocery stores. A native rural of Kansas who now represents a suburban Kansas City district, Olson said lawmakers should be investing in grocery stores, broadband, and housing to improve rural communities. If we think about it and we're smart about it, there's plenty of opportunities all throughout the Midwest, especially to grow these economies, he said. The pandemic underscored both the importance of the fragility of rural grocery stores, said Jillian Linister, interim police director at Nonprofit Center for Rural Affairs. After the pandemic, we have seen a lot of these local grocery stores just struggling to keep the doors open with all the economic and workforce challenges we face in the current economy and the competition from big box retailers, she said. Based in Lyons, Nebraska, the center has backed bills in both Nebraska and Iowa this session to provide small grants or loans to grocery stores with fewer than 25 employees in the underserved communities. The hope is that providing money to replace a broken freezer or leaky roof could make the difference in keeping stores open. Aside from preserving fresh fruit access, Linister said, grocery stores serve a wider social role. It's a place where you see your neighbors, where your teenagers get their first job, where there's a bulletin board with help wanted and things for sale, she said. So it's a really important part of the social infrastructure of our small rural town. A service to the community. Brian Horkin knows his customers. The general manager of Post 60 Market, he knows the busy mom who runs to the frozen foods aisles to find something for dinner that night. He knows the families that only load up their carts on paydays, and he knows when he should check up on someone who hasn't been in for an unusually long stretch. Emerson sits at the convergence of three counties, including one of Nebraska's poorest. The market can't compete with the prices of mega retailers like Walmart, but Horick tries to at least beat the costs found at the regional grocery store chain 20 miles away and loads the shelf with plenty of generic options. Still, some customers will pay with loose change. Others drop in to rummage through the bins of discounted items nearing their expiration dates. Remote stores like this can struggle to secure vendors. No bakers will deliver fresh bread here, so all the sandwich bread, buns, and cupcakes come in frozen. And the store only gets one delivery of fresh food every Wednesday. By Tuesdays, the bananas start to look pretty sketchy, Horkin said. But whatever it lacks in variety, the store makes up for in service. Horkin will special order just about anything if a customer asks. On a back shelf, he set aside a case of Rice-A-Roni for one man, a pack of small Pepsi bottles for a woman in a nursing home, and a case of wet cat food for a woman who feeds strays. One man has a standing order for a case of pickled beets every week. There have been some months when Horick wasn't sure Post 60 Market stores would remain open, but things changed for the better in January, when a storm blanketed the region with a record snow. The two-lane roads connecting Emerson to Sooks Valley were impassable for days, pushing many locals to try or rediscover Post 60 Market. It was kind of a wake-up call, he said. People were so happy the grocery store was here. The pending legislation could help with a litany of items on the market's to-do list. A leaky basement, the rubber gaskets that need replacing on the produce cooler, not to mention the dream of a room to butcher fresh cuts of meat. Named after the town's former Legion Post, the co-op sold common shares for $500 and preferred shares for $1,000. While shareholders could one day see dividends, their investments were in reality more like contributions. Nathan Mueller, who leads the co-op board, said the store just aims to break even. At its heart, this is a business, he said, but really the business is being a service to the community. Nebraska State Senator Teresa Ibach said rural grocery stores, whether they're for profit, cooperatives, or nonprofits, deserve the state's support. I think the trade-offs is, if you're willing to invest in a small local communities, you're willing to invest in you. A Republican, Ibach, sponsored the legislation that would set aside $4 million over two fiscal years for rural grocers. While the legislation got favorable reviews during its January hearing, Ibach was unsure whether it would advance out of committee. It's got legs and it's got substance, and I hope it does, but we're halfway through the session already, she said, and so who knows what will make it to the floor. If approved, the measure could help Greg's Market in Exeter, Nebraska, about 50 miles west of Lincoln. The store has a honey do list a mile long, said Mitchell Schlegelmich, who leads the board overseeing its operation. Just before he heard about the legislation, Schlegelmich said a freezer sensor failed, costing some $2,500 in spoiled inventory. It was a real punch in the gut, he's told lawmakers at the January hearing. It just took our breath away. Investors aren't looking to make money or even get their money back, Schlegelmich said in an interview with Stateline. Greg's market just aims to break even, so something as seemingly as small as a field center could pose an existential threat. The legislation gave me a sense of relief that maybe there is some hope, he said. Catherine Dreger says rural communities need more than just dollar stores and gas stations. We need places where you can buy a kiwi, an onion, potato, beets, she said. The director of Regional Sustainable Development Partnerships at the University of Minnesota, Dreger works with grocery stores across the state. Aside from the health benefits of fresh food, she said, rural stores are key to building more resilient supply chains since they can produce products from a variety of small vendors. Dreger advocated for a state program to improve healthy food access that began offering grants to rural and urban stores in 2017. Last year, the State Agriculture Department funded 15 projects at a cost of $426,862, so nearly five times as much was requested. I believe every rural grocery store we lose is at our own peril, Dreger said. There's so much public good in these small private businesses. That is why this public investment in the private sectors is really important. Dreger recalled one Minnesota grocer who had to choose between fixing her broken front tooth or her store's leaky roof. She chose the roof, Dreger said, so she worked at the cash register at the store she owned without a tooth for over a year. Just as important as money, though, is leadership, said North Dakota Democratic State Senator Kathy Hogan. She co-sponsored a new law last year that made $1 million available to help preserve rural grocery stores. That money will only help if communities have strong leaders willing to work together, she said. Sometimes people think money is the answer to everything, she said. The secret of success is this is not so much money, but local organization. Republican State Senate Jan Meidral, another co-sponsor, said the legislation was inspired by the work of grocery stores, communities, and schools in the northeast corner of the state. After struggling to find vendors willing to make small deliveries to remote areas, three stores formed a cooperative that can demand more inventory and better prices from suppliers, benefiting customers, schools, and businesses. As a conservative, I love seeing that happen, Meidral said. The legislation required a local match from organizers and aims to pull multiple retailers and community organizers together to help stabilize deliveries and costs. I don't believe in just handing out money from the government, Meidral said. It has to rise from the bottom up. A town missing its centerpiece. People like to say the Iowa town of Malvern punches above its weight. Though it's home to fewer than 1,300 people, the town toots miles of bike trails, a community garden, and public art sculptures. On Main Street, two restaurants, medical clinics, a bank, a pharmacy, and even a fitness center. But a fenced-in gaping hole is an obvious reminder of what's missing, the town's staple grocery store, lost in a 2021 fire. Tom Mulliland was the fourth-generation owner of Mulliland Grocery Store, which traces its history to the 1870s. Since the fire, the community has rallied around him. Meta, parent company of Facebook and Instagram, funded a documentary short film about the effort to rebuild the grocery store last year. But even with an Oscar-winning documentary as a director and scores of headlines, Mulliland has struggled. He's faced problems with insurance, finances, and construction headaches that set the rebuild back. When the store was open, it was a hub of activity. People would drive long distances to buy his meat from his meat counter. And in times of crisis, such as the recent flood in the area, customers would hand him cash, knowing he'd get it to folks who needed it most. It's those little things about being human and caring about your community and others that add up, he said. Mulliland, 63, could have walked away from the store, but he said it's too important to the community and his family. The morning after the fire, he wrote an apology to his ancestors on Facebook. In an interview, he said, My great-grandfather and my grandfather, everybody put so many decades of sweat and tears and frustration and joy, and on my watch, it disappeared. After 2 years, people around town have grown weary of waiting for a store. In here, it's a big topic of conversation, said Janelle May, who owns a C&M cafe and with her husband. It's a Main Street institution known for its ice cream and cheeseburger Saturdays, $4.99 for a burger and fries. Weekday mornings, the place is home to a coffee lodge. A few older people around town have their own key to get in before the place opens. We need it here, she said of the grocery store. It's important. Without Mullen Grocer, Malvern residents must drive 15 minutes to reach another small town grocery store, or half an hour to reach supermarket chains over near. The absence of the grocery store is sharp contrast to Malvern's otherwise encouraging trajectory. Some $40 million worth of new projects are in the works in the town, including public school renovations, a new subdivision of early education center. We're a growing town, said Jay Burdick, the president of Malvern Bank. The third generation of his family to own the bank, Burdick is building. The third generation of his family to own the bank, Burdick is bullish on the community's future. But every day brings a reminder of what's missing. His desk overlooks Main Street, directly across from the empty grocery store lot. It was a centerpiece of our Main Street, he said, and now it's just a hole in the ground. So that's the end of that story, but there are two more pictures here that I'm going to read what they describe what they look like for you. So the first caption reads, a firefighter peers into Mullen Grocery in Malvern on December 14th, 2021. The morning after a fire destroyed the building. The picture looks like it was taken from the street, with a building that looks destroyed by fire behind it and a firefighter peeking in through what used to probably be a doorway or a window. The other picture's caption reads, General Manager Brian Horak walks down an aisle at Post 60 Market in Emerson, Nebraska. Locals opened the market as a cooperative in 2022 after the tiny town lost its only grocery store. Lawmakers in Nebraska and other states are seeking to provide loans and grants to keep small rural markets open. In the picture, the man is walking down a grocery store aisle, and he's surrounded by heavily stocked shelves. And now on to the next story. This one is about my school. Drake University may cut academic programs, jobs. By Brooklyn Drazy. 4% of Drake University students could see their degree programs eliminated under cost-cutting measures recommended by the college to help recoup budget defects. Drake University Provost Sue Madison announced that a faculty program review launched in November has recommended the discontinuance of 13 undergraduate majors, minors, and certificates. In an email sent to faculty on Friday, Madison said 9 faculty members have been notified that their academic program and faculty line were recommended for termination. Before I continue, I realize that there is a picture, so I'm going to describe that to you first. The caption reads, a Drake University program review has recommended the elimination of 13 academic programs and 9 faculty lines in order to address budget defects. The picture shows a large old building called Old Main and a bunch of colorful trees surrounding it. It is taken from high above as if it was taken by a drone. Back to the story, Madison said in her message that program reviews like this one that led to these recommendations are essential to ensuring the university is meeting societal needs, satisfying student interests, and providing a quality education. It's important for institutions like ours to periodically review our academic programs, curriculum, and makeup of our operating budget, as we have many times in our 143-year history, to ensure we're well-positioned for the future, Drake University President Marty Martin said in a statement. This work demands that we make difficult decisions, but also presents an opportunity to invest in an academic innovation that meets evolving student needs. While focusing on expanding college access opportunities, all to ensure a prosperous future for our institution and our students, Martin said. The program reviews and recommendations were one of several measures taken, including curriculum reviews to reach a balance button. Budget, Madison said in her message to campus. The review also served to ensure Drake's future as a mission-driven institution that provides outstanding educational opportunities. Students currently enrolled in programs that could be axed will be provided with plans to finish their degree on schedule, Madison said in her message to the campus community, and students who are hoping to enter into these programs will be able to pivot to similar areas of study with individualized help and guidance. The programs recommended for discontinuation are undergraduate majors in anthropology/sociology, astronomy, physics, religion, rhetoric, and healthcare administration. Undergraduate minors in anthropology, religion, rhetoric, and East Asian studies. Graduate programs in accountancy, public administration, and a graduate certificate in evidence-based for healthcare. As for faculty members whose programs or positions have been recommended for termination, they have until April 1st to submit evidence that retaining the program is the best interest of the institution, Madison said. The submissions will be reviewed by Madison, the county senate, committees, and deans before they make the final recommendations to the faculty senate. The faculty senate will vote on the recommendations at its April 17th meeting, after which Martin will review them and bring them to the board of trustees to vote on. He will share the results with the campus community April 29th, Madison said. There is no easy way to receive this message for those whose positions are being recommended for elimination, Madison said in the email. Please continue to support colleagues whose lives have been upended. That's the end of that story, and now here's some national news. U.S. set up port in Gaza. Fears of humanitarian crisis intensify after ceasefire talks stall. By Sami Madri, Amy Cheswell, and Amar Mahadi. Washington. U.S. President Joe Biden announced a plan Thursday for the U.S. military to help establish a temporary port on the Gaza coast to increase the flow of aid into the territory during the Israel-Hamas war. The announcement during the Biden State of the Union address came amid a widening humanitarian crisis across Gaza that has forced many people to scramble for food to survive and begun causing deaths from malnutrition. Hopes for reaching a ceasefire before the Muslim holy month of Ramadan, which starts in the coming days, stalled Thursday when Hamas said its delegation left Cairo, where talks on a deal were being held. The outline for the ceasefire would have been included in a wide inclusion of aid into Gaza. Aid groups said their efforts to deliver needed supplies to Gaza are hampered because of the difficulty of coordinating with the Israel military, the ongoing hostilities, and breakdown of the public order. It is even more difficult to get aid into the isolated north. U.S. officials who spoke on delete condition of anonymity said the planned operation will not require American troops on the ground to build the pier that is intended to allow more shipments of food, medicine, and other essential items. The officials did not provide details about how the pier would be built. The port will allow shipments to flow into Gaza via Cyprus from the U.S. military and allies, the administration officials said. American General Eric Carilla, head of the U.S. Central Command, told the U.S. Armed Services Committee that he briefed officials on such maritime operation. He said the Central Command provided options for increasing the number of trucks taking aid to areas in northern Gaza. Carilla also said Thursday that exploding violence in the Middle East, fueled by Iran, presents the most likely threat to the U.S. homeland, and the risk of an attack by violent extremists in Afghanistan on American and Western interests abroad is increasing. Kurila said the Islamic State groups, Khorasan affiliates in Afghanistan and Syria are retain the attack capability and the will. Kurila said Islamic State groups, Khorasan affiliates in Afghanistan and Syria retain the capability and the will to attack and could strike in as little as 6 months and with little to no warning. In other comments, he said the U.S. has been using directed energy weapons to shoot down drones, but could use more of those so that the Navy doesn't have to use large, expensive missiles to take out smaller threats. On to the next story. Feds to increase focus on artificial intelligence. AG's office warns of harsher sentences for high-tech crimes. Washington, the Justice Department will step up its focus on artificial intelligence, with officials warning Thursday that companies and people who deliberately misuse the technology to advance the white-collar crime, like price fixing, fraud, or market manipulation, will be at risk for a harsher sentence. Deputy Attorney General Lisa Monaco said Justice Department will take into account how well a company is managing the risk of AI technology each time it assesses a corporate compliance program. Thursday's comments from the Justice Department's number two leader underscore the extent to which law enforcement officials are concerned about how the rapidly developing technology could be exploited by foreign adversaries or by corporate criminals to harm the U.S. All the new technologies are a double-edged sword, but AI may be the sharpest blade yet. It holds great promise to improve our lives, but great peril when criminals use it to supercharge their illegal activities, including corporate crime, Monaco told an American Bar Association conference of white-collar lawyers in San Francisco. That was the end of that one. A bit of a short story, and it looks like the next one will be too. The title is, Officials Say Power Lines Ignited Texas Wildfires. Power lines ignited massive wildfires across the Texas Panhandle last week that killed at least two people and thousands of livestock and destroyed as many as 500 structures, officials said Thursday, including the largest blaze in state history. The Texas A&M Forest Service said its investigators concluded power lines ignited the historic Smokehouse Creek Fire, which has burned nearly 1,700 square miles and spilled into Oklahoma, and the Windy Deuce Fire, which has burned about 225 square miles. It did not elaborate. The Smokehouse ceasefire was 75% contained Thursday, while the Windy Deuce Fire was 89%. Utility provider Xcel Energy said its equipment appeared to have sparked the Smokehouse Creek Fire. The Minnesota-based company said it did not believe its equipment caused the ignition of the Windy Deuce Fire. And with that, we're about halfway. You're listening to the Council Bluffs Daily Nonpareil for March 8th on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped in Des Moines. I'm Emma Masso from Drake University. IRIS volunteers love to hear from listeners. If you have any comments or questions about this, or any IRIS program, please call toll-free from anywhere in Iowa at 515-243-6833. All right, it looks like there are no obituaries today, so I'm going to move on to sports. The first title reads, Washington spoils rivals Pac-12 title hopes. So first there is a picture, and the caption reads, Close encounter. Stanford forward Cameron Brink runs into a camera operator during Thursday's Pac-12 women's basketball tournament quarterfinal game against California in Las Vegas. The number 2 ranked Cardinal advanced to the Pac-12 semifinals with a 71-57 victory as they move closer to locking up a number 1 seed in the NCCA tournament. In the picture, it shows a female athlete sitting on a table or bench with a camera person really close to her holding a camera, and behind them are some people in the audience, a crowd of people. The next title is Red Sox Place a Big Bet on Bello. There's a picture for this one. The caption says, Red Sox pitcher Brian Bello works out during spring training in Fort Myers, Florida. In the picture, it shows an athlete wearing a Red Sox uniform and baseball cap throwing a baseball. The story reads, after getting bad news about the biggest off-season addition to their rotation, the Boston Red Sox are making a major long-term investment in the team's top returning pitcher. Young right-hander Brian Bello agreed to a $55 million 6-year contract Thursday that indicates a club option for 2023. 23rd. The move came together as Boston learned of an injury to Lucas Giolito, who headed to Alabama this week for a second opinion in his ailing right elbow. Bello, who turns 25 in May, could have been eligible for arbitration after 2025 and could have been a free agent following the 2028 season. The contract includes a $21 million team option for 2030 with a $1 million buyout that, if exercised, would make the agreement worth $75 million over 7 seasons. Bello went 12-11 with a 4.24 ERA in 25 starts last season while striking out 132 and walking 45 in 157 innings. He figures to head a rotation that remains a concern. The 29-year-old Giolito signed an $38.5 million 2-year contract with the Red Sox and made 2 spring training starts before reporting elbow discomfort. Briefly, spring breakout, Baltimore infielder Jackson Holliday, Milwaukee outfielder Jackson Correa, and Pittsburgh right-hander Paul Skenes headline rosters for inaugural spring breakout designed to showcase top prospects. Each of 30 major league organizations announced rosters for the event, which includes 16 games from March 14th to 17th at spring training sites. Brave. Michael Harris II hit his 3rd Grapefruit League homer, a 3rd inning drive-off off Boston's Tanner Houck in the Braves' 3-2 victory. Harris is 8 out of 18 with 5 runs and 5 RBIs, with 6 runs and 5 RBIs. Rangers. Jared Walsh hit an RBI single in Texas's 7-5 victory over the Arizona Diamondbacks and has reached base in 10 of his 20 plate appearances this spring. Cubs. Manager Craig Counsell told reporters that right-hander Caleb Killian has a teres major strain and is expected to be out until All-Star break. Killian was 0-1 with a 16.88 ERA in 3 appearances for Chicago last season. Athletics. Oakland returns to Las Vegas this weekend for exhibition games against Milwaukee, their first appearance since announcing the relocation to what the team envisions as its future home city. The game will be played at Las Vegas Ballpark, the home of franchise's AAA Avatars. Retired. Former All-Star catcher Mike Zunino is retiring at age 32 after 11 major league seasons. Zunino hit .199 with 149 homers and 372 RBIs for Seattle, Tampa Bay, and Cleveland. The next story is titled Broncos Star Safety Simons, the Latest Salary Cap Casualty. Englewood, Colorado. Justin Simons became one of the top free agents on the market Thursday, while the Denver Broncos released their star safety in a cost-cutting move. Simons is the first veteran to pay the price for the enormous dead cap charges the Broncos are facing when they release quarterback Russell Wilson next week. A second team All-Pro in four of his five last seasons, Simon interceded multiple passes in each of his 8 years in Denver, and his 30 picks lead all NFL and his 30 picks lead all NFL players since his rookie season in 2016. Next to the text here, there is a picture. Underneath it, it just says Simons, and it shows the man with on his nose has a stripe of black going across under both his eyes and across his nose. To continue on with the story, Simons was set to earn $14.5 million this upcoming season, the final year of the four-year $61 million deal he signed in 2021. All high-earning veterans on the Broncos rosters are vulnerable to release because the team is facing a record $81 million in dead cap charges in the fallout from Wilson's impending departure. Others who could follow Simons out of Denver include left tackle Garrett Bowles, linebacker Josie Jewell, and receivers Tim Patrick and Cortland Sutton. Simons teamed with quarterback Patrick Certain the second, the last 3 years to form one of the NFL's most spectacular secondaries, even as the Broncos extended their playoff drought to 8 seasons and their string of losing campaigns to 7. Simons was also the Broncos' most active player in charitable appearances and was a fan favorite on a team that's had little to cheer for since winning Super Bowl 50 after the 2015 season. Briefly, Bears. Pro Bowl quarterback Jalon Johnson agreed to a four-year, $75 million contract with Chicago that guarantees him $54.4 million, according to two AP sources. The move comes 2 days after the Bears placed the franchise tag on Johnson. He would have been due $19.8 million in 2024 had he not agreed to the extension prior to the July 15 deadline. Steelers. Pittsburgh released safety Keanu Neal after he failed a physical. Neal played in 9 games for the Steelers in 2023, 8 of them starts. He suffered a rib injury in a win over Green Bay on November 12th when he was hit at the end of a 32-yard interception return in the fourth quarter. Jaguars. According to an AP source, Jacksonville agreed to a 3-year, $28.5 million contract with guard Ezra Cleveland. The deal includes a $14.5 million guaranteed. The move prevents Cleveland from hitting the free agent market next week. Saints. New Orleans safety Tyron Messia has agreed to a new 2-year contract that runs through the 2025 season. The 23-year-old previously was under contract through 2024. Rams. Right guard Kevin Dotson agreed to the terms on a 3-year contract to stay with Los Angeles. The deal is expected to be worth $24 million for Dotson, who became one of the NFL's top-rated guards and pillar of the Rams' offense last season. Dolphins. According to an AP source, Miami agreed to a 2-year contract with Jonnu Smith, giving the Dolphins a pass-catching option that they lacked at tight end last season. And now here's a picture titled, Edwards' Spectacular Block at Buzzer Helps Wolves' Top Pacers. The caption reads, Timberwolves guard Anthony Edwards reacts after scoring against the Pacers during the second half of Thursday's game in Indianapolis. In the picture, it has a blurred out background with a crowd and a baseball hole net. And then in the picture shows the Timberwolves guard celebrating. The next story is titled, Net Simons Out for Rest of Season. New York. Ben Simons will miss the rest of New York. Ben Simons will miss the remainder of the season. The third straight year of the former All-Star season has ended early due to back problems. The Brooklyn Nets said Thursday that Simons will use the rest of this season to consult with specialists and seek treatment options for a pinched nerve in his lower back that sidelined him twice this season. Simons has been limited to 15 games. He missed 38 straight at one point, and he sat out the last 5. Simons, along with his representatives and Nets medical personnel, are currently in discussions with numerous experts to determine the course of action that will provide him with the best opportunity for long-term sustainable health, the Nets said. The number one pick in 2016 draft finishes with averages of 6.1 points, 7.9 rebounds, and 5.7 assists. The next title reads, Canes make big trade deadline eve splat. Jake Guentzel is heading to Carolina Hurricanes after the biggest move of the NHL season came off the eve of the trade deadline. Carolina acquired Guentzel in a blockbuster trade with the Pittsburgh Penguins late Thursday night, sending forward Michael Bunting, 3 prospects, and 2 conditional draft picks for the 2-time 40-goal scorer. Add the Hurricanes to the growing list of Stanley Cup contenders going all in after the team made its biggest deadline splash in several years. Jake is an elite goal scorer and playmaker who has produced at a high level for the entire NHL career, Carolina general manager Don Waddell said. Ty is a young, offensive-minded defenseman who will provide us with another reliable option on the blue line. We're thrilled to bolster our lineup as we compete to bring Stanley Cup back to Ralph. The Guentzel trade capped off a flurry of activity over the past 48 hours that included nearly every Cup favorite making a move. The Toronto Maple Leafs joined the trading party Thursday, while 2 of the best in the West made more additions to improve crucial areas. Colorado acquired a pair of versatile forwards from Central Division rivals, Brandon Doheim from Minnesota and Yakov Trevin from Nashville. Edmonton got defenseman Troy Stretcher from Arizona, and Toronto received Joel Edinson from Washington. The next news story is a lifestyle story. It's a movie review titled A Darkly Funny Wild Ride. Kristen Stewart, Katie O'Brien star in Love Lies and Bleeding by Katie Walsh. There's a picture, the caption says, Katie O'Brien left, and Kristen Stewart in Love Lies and Bleeding, directed by Rose Glass, A24 Films. It shows 2 girls, one is sitting on the top of a car, the other is standing next to her. The story reads, the first time we glimpse Jackie, Katie O'Brien, on screen in Love Lies and Bleeding, it is not particularly auspicious, but we haven't yet seen Jackie through the eyes of Lou, Kristen Stewart, and that's only the gaze that matters in this film. When Lou, the manager at a muscle head gym, catches sight of Jackie prowling among the weight machines, skin gleaming, her powerfully muscular body reflected in the mirror, almost glowing. It's like the director, Rose Glass, is letting us in on a lusty little secret. Lou's desire is so palpable that you can smell it, and lucky for her, the feeling is mutual. It's 1989 in an anonymous southwestern town, and Jackie is only drifting through on her way to bodybuilding competition in Las Vegas. She's seemingly dropping from the galaxies like one of the shooting stars that streak across the vast night sky. And even in the desolate gym parking lot, their chemistry is a supernova explosion. But the reality of life in this small, rough town has an insistent, inevitable darkness. There are Lou's battered sister, Beth, Jenna Malone, and her philandering, abusive husband, JJ, Dave Franco. There are the FBI agents who would really like to talk to Lou about her estranged father, Lou Sr., Ed Harris, who owns the gun range where Jackie has picked up a few waitressing shifts. There's Daisy, Anna Barry Smidchkoff, a ditzy nagging townie who pops up, keening for attention at the worst times. There are too many connections and coincidences swirling around them, and as Louis and Jackie collide sexually, there looms a bloodier collision on the horizon. Sheer ominousness telegraphed in Lou's red-drenched flashbacks. The dusty desert setting and grimy crime noir genre is just a swerve away from Glass's debut film, Saint Maud. In Love Lies and Bleeding, which is written by Glass, and Veronica Tofilska, a fixation on flesh persists. In a more operatically sensual and awfully deeply gross way, bodies pulsate with life and chemicals, nicotine, steroids, and the rush of post-collateral oxytocin. But juxtaposed against Jackie's pumped-up form, which thrums and bulges with a viality and violence, there are bodies that move the wrong way, spurt surprising fluids, and lie decaying, waiting to reveal their truths. It is in this phantasmagorically corporeal obsession that Glass reveals the shared DNA of Saint Maud and Love Lies Bleeding, which are both about the twisted expansiveness of the female imagination and whether that can transcend reality. The film takes a wild Amazonian-sized swing in the third act that may puzzle some viewers who are expecting something more grounded and gritty, but makes perfect sense when seen as an altruistic choice from Glass, who imagines an ending that is at once shockingly optimistic before slapping us back into the dirt. Where Saint Maud is sorrowful, Love Lies and Bleeding is darkly funny in its own distinctive aesthetic expression. There is humor baked into almost every line, edited by Mark Townes. The stink of sex and cigarettes permits every dusty frame shot by Ben Fordsman. Clint Mansell's score hums along from an eerie ambience to the 80s style sync. Stewart takes capability to the crime and she's street smart but clumsy, playing in her father's criminal sandbox, though she doesn't have a clue. At one point, he asks if she's threatening him, and Stewart's deadpan but desperate delivery of, "Yup," is instantly classic. O'Brien has been the breakout star of Love Lies Bleeding ever since the memorable first poster of the film debuted. But for all of Jackie's strength, O'Brien performs her with a sense of innocent and wide-eyed wonder at her own well-honed capabilities. The next section is titled What to Watch, Friday, March 8th, 2024. All times central. Start times can vary based on cable and satellite provider. Confirm times on your on-screen guide. The first show is called Blown Away, Netflix season premiere. In season 4 of the competition, 10 glassblowers turn up the heat for a grueling contest in North America's largest hot shop for a chance to win a prize package worth $100,000. The next show is called Damsel. The next film is called Damsel, It's a Netflix original film. In this dark fantasy, dutiful Princess Elodie, Millie Bobby Brown, agrees to marry a handsome prince, Nick Robertson, only to find that the royal family has recruited her as a sacrifice to repay an ancient debt. Thrown into a cave with a fire-breathing dragon, she must rely on her wits and will to survive. Robert Wright, Angela Bassett, Ray Winstone, and Sherelle Adashlu also star. Next is NBA basketball on ESPN beginning at 6:30 p.m. live. The Minnesota Timberwolves head into Cleveland for a meeting with the Cavaliers, and the Milwaukee Bucks head to Tinseltown for a tilt with the LA Lakers for ESPN's Friday NBA doubleheader. The next show is called Gold Rush, White Water, on Discovery Channel at 7 p.m., season premiere. Season 8 of this reality series finds Dustin Hurt desperate for redemption after barely escaping with his life last season. Hurt is forced to streamline his crew and come up with a whole new plan for attack for the deadly creek that nearly destroyed him. He must overcome heartache as he bids a final farewell to his dying father, Dakota Fred, before he can attempt to triumph over Mother Nature and find the life-changing gold of Nugget Creek. The final show is called Hightown, stars 8 p.m., series final. In Big Fish, the Crime Dramas series finale, Ray, James Badge Dale, and Renee, Riley, Vulcan, are backed against the wall and must make a deal with the devil. Monica Raymond also stars. The next section is titled Catch a Classic, 31 Days of Oscar 2024 Best Picture. It's on TMC beginning at 5:15 a.m. Turner Classic Movies' 31 Days of Oscar event continues this morning and into early evening with a lineup featuring more films that were nominated for Next Picture. Our Town, The Story of Louis Pulsifer, Pictured, Johnny Belinda, The Yearning, Father of the Bride, The Music Man, Mr. Roberts. Starring in primetime and going into Saturday morning are films that won Best Picture: Rain Man, Annie Hall, The Apartment, Gigi, and The Great Ziegfeld. All right, looks like this is the last story. It's titled Last Year Offers Hope, Caution for NFL Teams by Josh DeBoe. NFL teams are set to dole out billions in free agent contracts in the coming years as teams around the league hope that bold moves in March will pay off with wins on the field once the season starts. But in a league with a sharp aging curve and specific systems that don't suit all the players, those dollars don't guarantee success. According to SpotTrack website, NFL teams handed out more than $3.3 billion in contracts last offseason, with nearly half of that money fully guaranteed at signing. The biggest spenders were far from the biggest winners in the season, as the signing expense free agents is typically not the best way to turn around a team. The six biggest spenders last offseason all missed the postseason, led by Denver committing more than $250 million in contracts, only to miss the playoffs for the eighth straight season after going 8-9 in coach Sean Payton's first season. Other big spenders such as New Orleans, Atlanta, Chicago, Las Vegas, and Carolina were also back home when the playoffs started, while a team such as the Los Angeles Rams got into the postseason after spending only $10.2 million in free agency. Green Bay, Baltimore, and Dallas were among the other teams that spent less than $50 million in free agency last offseason and got into the playoffs. Green Bay. There are two pictures shown here. The first one is captioned, "The six biggest spenders last offseason all miss the postseason, led by Denver committing more than $250 million in contracts, only to miss the playoffs for the eighth straight season after going 8-9 in Coach Sean Payton's first season. The picture shows a man being interviewed with two mics by him, looking sad. The next photo is captioned, "New York Jets receive wide receiver Alan Lazard never lived up to the four-year, $44 million deal he signed last offseason, but it was still a bargain." The picture shows the wide receiver in uniform, seemingly coming onto the field. And that brings us to the end of today's reading of the Council Bluffs Daily Nonpareil for March 8th. The Nonpareil can be heard each weekday at 5 p.m. I'm Emma Massa from Drake University in Des Moines. Thank you for sharing your time with IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind.